In 2013, I was living in London when I went through my Kate Atkinson phase. I read behind the scenes at the museum, and as soon as I was done, I picked up Life After Life, and from there I was hooked. Now, I really loved these books for their intricate plotting, their awesome, complicated female characters, and the way they really helped me to understand something of the British psyche, in particular how my new home had been shaped by events of the 20th century. Now, Kate Atkinson has a new book. It's called Transcription, and it takes us to the secret world of the MI5 during and after World War II. And I am so thrilled I get to speak to her today. Kate Atkinson, welcome to The Hub.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here. Now, well, good to be here, a long way away, but good to be here.
We're practically together, Kate. Now, much of your new book is set during World War II, and that's a similar setting to your famous novel Life After Life. Why such a fascination with this period of British history?
Well, I think writers are vultures. You know, we feed off other people's stories, and wars, God help me, provide a very rich feeding ground, because, you know, it's a very intense period in any person's life, in an individual's life, or in the national life. And so there are, you know, it is full of heroism and horror and experiences, heightened experiences that people wouldn't have. So therefore, you're not searching for plot, because the war is the plot in a way. So, and I've always been fascinated by the Blitz. So Life After Life focuses, it moves towards the Blitz all the time. And in A God in Ruins, it's the bombing war. And with this book, I felt I'd sort of done, as it were, the horror of war. And then this Transcription is set during the phony war, as we call it, which is, you know, the 18 months before anything really happens. We're still at the point when the book starts, we're still fighting in France. We haven't got to Dunkirk. We haven't been bombed. The Battle of Britain hasn't taken place above the fields of Kent. We haven't experienced war, and nor did the British know how long it was going to last. I don't think anyone suspected it were going to be a war of attrition that would last for 6 years, or that it would be that long until we set foot on the continent again, because this book, we haven't even left the continent. So I think in that period, before people understood what war was, I think there's a huge amount of scope for paranoia, and that people were focused a lot more in many ways on the enemy within rather than the enemy without. I wasn't interested in those aspects of the wars before, like, oh, you know, we've been bombed, or the Blitz spirit, or what was on the ration. I wasn't interested in any of that. I was much more interested in the sort of the internal workings of people's minds, I think.
And Kate, you do that through our hero, who at the start of the book is 18-year-old Juliet Armstrong. Can you introduce me to Juliet?
Well, Juliet, there's aspects of Juliet's character and life which I left blank in my own mind, I have to say. So I don't necessarily know everything about Juliet, because she's a very ambiguous person. Well, the whole book is about ambiguity. Everyone is ambiguous. But she's actually a pathological liar. I mean, I think she's lies about anything for any no good reason sometimes. And I thought that was quite interesting, because I had to make her attractive, because we don't like liars, and we don't like them in books on the whole. So I had to make her seem that it wasn't an evil kind of personality trait. I mean, I think I find her a very attractive character, and other people say she's a very attractive character, so that's good. But I think it's because she's quite an odd mixture of naivety and cynicism.
She's a pathological liar, which I guess makes her a pretty good spy, and that's what she does. She joins the MI5.
Well, she joins, initially she was recruited just to be a typist, but she's given greater roles. And in the Maxwell Knight's operations during the war, he ran several women spies, because he believed women were better at espionage.
Maxwell Knight is a real person, Kate?
He's a real person. He's not in the book, although there's a character who is very much influenced by what I read about Maxwell Knight. But he was a handler of several women who were part of the operations that were dealing with the Fifth Column, the enemy within, the fascists from between the wars. And he believed women were better at spying, I think, because he thought they were more underhand. So it wasn't particularly a case of, you know, equality or they're better at the job. It's just that they were better at keeping secrets. And so, in a way, Juliet is based on very, very, very loosely based on one of the women that he ran, Joan Miller, who he had a relationship with. So there's real people behind these characters, but only in a kind of a stepping off the platform way, not in a, you know, because I wouldn't want to base characters on real people, because that would be, you know, if anyone based a fictional character on me, I think I'd have to have them quietly assassinated. So I don't think it's a very good thing to do. So they're highly, 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 highly fictionalized versions of real people, some of them, not all of them.
So for Juliet Armstrong's first job, she's transcribing these covert meetings with fifth columnists who are fascist sympathisers in London. They think they're meeting with an agent of the German government, but he's actually a British spy. And she's sitting in a room next door transcribing these meetings. And it struck me that the work is equal parts super exciting and, you know, you're working for spies, but it's also deathly boring.
I know. I mean, I've been a secretary in a former life, so I've sat at a typewriter, chained to a typewriter, as she says. So I know I know that it's a tedious job, and it's also tedious reading all the transcriptions because there's hundreds of pages of them. So that part of her life is not very thrilling. It's only really when she's recruited to go undercover and she gets a code name and, you know, she's sent in to pretend to be someone else. But of course, Juliet's always pretending to be someone else, which makes her a very good spy. Obviously, that's why she's recruited. But the agent who's having these conversations, Godfrey Toby, he was definitely inspired in the beginning by the real life Jack King, which was also a code name because everyone has many names in the world of espionage. And he was apparently a very lowly bank clerk called Eric Roberts. But in fact, he'd been, you know, working for MI5 for a long time in one capacity or another. And again, I couldn't base a real character on him, and he becomes in fact rather than really being a character, he's very shadowy. And there's lots of people in Juliet's life in 1940 who are very shadowy or not who they seem, and it was quite a strain when you're writing to keep that sense of not knowing going, because you don't want to irritate the reader, you don't want them to be flinging down the book in despair going, oh, I don't understand who anyone is in this book. So that was quite a challenge. So just to make it really centred on Juliet was important, so that it didn't become about all these other people who you didn't know who they were, that they just kind of came on stage and left again.
This is The Hub on Books, and you're hearing from the British novelist Kate Atkinson, whose latest book takes us into a world of spies and subterfuge during World War II. Now, Kate, you've mentioned that these characters and these transcriptions are inspired by history, by real transcriptions. Mm. How did you discover this story?
Well, MI5 make periodic releases of material that they think will be interesting and not threaten the national security historically, because they can do what they want. There isn't, you know, we as the public have no access to MI5 archives, so they can decide what they want to release. And it was when I was working online at the National Archives for A God in Ruins, the last book, that it kind of popped up as, oh, new release from MI5. And it revealed Jack King's real name, Eric Roberts, which had been a matter of speculation for decades. And it also made available the transcriptions, and it gave a little bit of the story. And because I was writing another book at the time, and I thought, oh, Lord, don't let anyone else see what a good story this would make. And so I wasn't ready to write. But when I was ready to write, I thought, I can't write about Eric Roberts, you know, because he's a real person. And I don't know how to get into this. And then I thought, I read all the transcripts and I thought, oh, I understand what it's like to be a typist. I understand this completely anonymous girl who's most of the transcripts do appear to be typed by the same person. Although there's obviously other people as well. And I thought, if I make it her story, then that liberates me completely to make everything up that I want. If she's fictional, therefore her story can be fictional. And yes, I can draw in strands from everything that happened in reality in this period, in this very small little part of MI5, but you know, I'm not writing a history book, I'm writing a novel, so it has to be fictionalized. And so that was, she gave me the key, but it took me quite a long time while thinking about this story before I found the way into it.
It is,
which is good, it's a good thing to do. The longer, this is my rule of proportion, is the longer you consciously and unconsciously think about a book, the easier it's going to be to write. So if you just sit down and think, right, what am I going to write for the next novel? It's doomed to disaster in my world.
Well, let's move forward, Kate, because your book is split into two parts in a way. We also meet Juliet Armstrong in 1950, when I loved this. She was working at the BBC making radio shows for children. And in fact, the whole BBC building seems to be riddled with former MI5 staff.
There was quite a crossover.
Was there? Because I didn't know about
this. Yes, there was. No, there were people who were in MI5 who'd worked in the BBC. There were people after the war, like Maxwell Knight, who worked in the BBC. So, you know, they're both monoliths of the establishment. They are, but I mean, particularly then, not, well, I suppose, I don't know what the definition of the establishment would be anymore, but in those days the BBC is very much a mouthpiece for the government. Is during the war it has this very, very important role, and so, you know, in a way they mirror each other in some ways. One is secretive, one is about not being secretive, being open about things, except not necessarily being open about things, because it's about propaganda and about keeping spirits up. So I think it's not so strange that they had this crossover, because they are the two big pillars society.
And I should mention that you are sitting in a BBC studio right now.
Yeah, indeed. I'm
indeed. Keeping an eye out.
Always interesting to be in the BBC. I'm not in the buildings next door that is the one you think of the BBC, that one. But Juliet was in Schools, which is across the road from here, in fact. It looks like a perfectly normal house. So the BBC has sort of colonised this area around Portland, Great Portland Street. But yes, I am in a BBC studio.
Oh, well, keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, for the spies.
That's it. Now, it's interesting to read your book this year, Kate, because I also read Michael Ondaatje's Warlight, and both books...
Oh, I've not read that yet.
Well, both books deal with spies. They deal with this period after the war. And I guess both of them are making a point that the war doesn't end at the armistice. And certainly for Juliet and her former colleagues, they haven't really been able to escape their war work 10 years later, have they?
No, and then the war just rumbles on into the Cold War, so that, you know, it doesn't really stop. And the things that they did had repercussions, certainly for Juliet there's repercussions, but the repercussions for Juliet are both personal and to do with her role in espionage during the war. So she has because something very bad happens, which we can't talk about because it would be a spoiler. And that is something that she is responsible for as an individual, but would not have happened if there hadn't been a war, I suppose. So I think in that sense, her repercussions are different from a lot of other people's. But I think that period, you know, that incredibly dingy period, 45 to 50 after the war, when Britain didn't recover, when it was, you know, food was still rationed, everyone was miserable, there was no money, that dark and gritty period, which I always also think about The Third Man and Vienna in that period, which is just so atmospheric in that film. But you have that sense of it's opened up something new and you don't really know what it is yet. You know, I mean, London was still a bomb site even in 1950. So that's a really fascinating, I find that period fascinating, that we still haven't regenerated. We're still suffering in a way that's quite depressing and quite existentially depressing, I think.
Mm. On the Hub on Books, I'm speaking to the award-winning British novelist Kate Atkinson. And Kate, I'm glad you're talking. We've come back to this period of time and your interest in it, because I wondered, reading your book set in World War II in the aftermath of World War II, what this period of British history might be able to tell us about the world today. Were you thinking about that when you were writing this book?
Well, I wasn't when I started. And then I did think more about it. And you know, there's a line where Juliet says to Perry, who's her handler, you know, we used to think of Hitler as a clown. And he says, yeah, the clowns are the dangerous ones. And I thought that was just after Trump was elected. And I did think, oh, and so not much has changed. But I do think, you know, there's the rise of nationalism. I've always said nationalism is the first step on the road to fascism. And I think we can see that sense of the need to reclaim sovereignty. I mean, I think there may be hidden messages within the book, but I don't think things have changed enormously due to our greater sophistication and cynicism, and due mostly to technology. So the world is as you know, an immensely, immensely different place now from 1940 and 1950. But I think people's concerns remain the same, I think. So in that sense, there is, you know, I don't want to make too great a point of it because I don't want to be seen to be writing a political novel, but I certainly felt that there was a lot of crossover underneath, rumbling underneath the book, I think.
And did I spot a Make England Great Again reference in your book, Kate?
Well, that was the sentiment of the fascists at the time. So, you know, and it still rattles around, their phrase. This, I think it is to do with, you know, they were experiencing, I mean, the interwar years were difficult, but I think you tell people that they're lacking something and then that's the thing that they want, because people are very responsive to being told things. I think we see that now that, you know, truth is no longer an absolute. And in a sense, does that start with wars? Does that start with propaganda? Does that start with beliefs? Because truth ceased to be an absolute in Nazi Germany. People adopt their own truths. And now, as we see, you know, with fake news and so on, people have no idea what to believe anymore. And that's a very disturbing state for people to be in, I think. And I think we see that, you know, in the world of espionage, we see that beginning in the Second World War. So a lot of things haven't changed. They've just moved on into a much worse place, I think.
A case of history repeating, which is a kind of a
which is what it does.
You've talked about, you know, in your career, isn't it, in your books?
Yeah. Yes, history repeats itself. That's what it does.
Do you think you'll return to this period again, Kate?
I'd like to write a novel that has at its heart D-Day, but not necessarily just about D-Day. So I will, but not yet.
Oh, well, Kate, I can't wait to see what idea actually makes it into a book next. It's been such a pleasure to meet you today.
Oh, thank you.
Kate Atkinson's latest book is Transcription, and it's published by Doubleday. And this is The Hub on Books. I'm Claire Nichols.